You're listening to a 95BFM podcast.
It's time for our weekly catch-up with the ACT Party's Simon Court.
For our weekly catch-up with the ACT Party, I spoke to MP Simon Court about some of the ACT's policies to battle the housing crisis. We started off by discussing their incentive for councils to increase the building of residential housing, looking at why it's important and how it will work. This incentive aims to take a 50% GST from the revenue of new residential buildings and give it back to councils. We then discussed ACT's plans to scrap the Resource Management Act, talking about what they believe to be an excess of consents and regulations and focus more on development. I also asked about the reforms they plan to make to the Business Act and how this will link into the housing crisis. First up is your policy to incentivize housing by sharing 50% of GST from new residential buildings with councils. Walk us through how this policy will work.
Well, currently, councils face most of the cost for delivering the infrastructure of the pipes, the underground networks, and the roads that service new development, while developers pay for the roads and the pipes inside the development. Council has to expand networks, upgrade wastewater treatment plants, and for every 5 or 10 or 20,000 people that arrive in Auckland, this places a huge burden on what's called bulk infrastructure. ACT's proposal is for councils that sign off a building consent, and say around New Zealand, that would amount to around $2.5 billion worth of construction every year for residential alone, which is what the government collects in GST. What ACT would do is have half of that GST returned to the councils that sign off the consent, because it's those councils that face the most pressure for infrastructure upgrades. And actually, that's one of the reasons why very often they're reluctant to say yes to new subdivisions, because they know all of the costs are going to fall back on them. But apart from rates over a very long period of time, they don't have any revenue up front to fund the bulk infrastructure. So ACT thinks that would be a great way to incentivise councils to say yes to consents quickly, but also give them access to a revenue stream of $1.2 billion a year, which for Auckland would amount to around $400 million of extra revenue, which they could then use to leverage against borrowing to build bulk infrastructure, to upgrade our networks so that our city can grow up as well as out.
And will there be regulations in the specific areas councils can invest the GST collected and how they do so?
What ACT is also asking for is councils to propose their infrastructure plan, which would support 30 years of growth. Currently, councils have a district plan or a regional plan, in Auckland's case, a unitary plan, which was signed off in 2015, that shows where the next half to 1 million people are coming to live. For example, 250,000 people are coming to live between Kumeu and Silverdale in the north of Auckland, hundreds of thousands more in the south and east. The problem is there's no infrastructure plan that sits underneath the spatial plan or the growth plan. And what ACT would do is have those councils prepare a 30-year infrastructure plan, and then central government's role would be to sign off on that. Now, in order to continue receiving funds, to be eligible for funds from land transport grants and so on, ACT would want to see a government auditing councils to make sure they're actually meeting their infrastructure delivery targets that enables land for housing to be brought to market. Because it's bringing more land to the market that actually creates a downward pressure on price. That's what infrastructure for servicing land is intended to do. Now, I'm an engineer. I love building things, but actually the purpose of all of this infrastructure is so that more land can be brought to market at an affordable price. Instead of, say, Auckland is paying $600,000 for a section in a greenfield site now, there should be a way to deliver this in a more affordable way over time so that our land prices remain stable while our salaries and wages increase.
Now, I understand that you want to create an incentive, but could 50% be too high? Do you think you'll get pushback from the public and developers in particular?
Well, every council I've been to see and every land developer who deals with council has said that is the most practical policy we've heard. What it means is councils, when they're signing off consent applications, sometimes for just 4 or 6 homes in an existing residential area, sometimes for dozens or hundreds in a new development, it's council arguing about who's going to pay to upgrade all of the bulk infrastructure down the line that developers say holds up their projects the most? So councils and developers, and of course future homeowners who want to get into these new builds, whether they're in a higher density building up in the city or in a new subdivision on the edge of town, they just want the opportunity to get into their new home as soon as possible. The more homes we can deliver to the market on more affordable land means that over time there will be a downward pressure on house prices. And that means that for younger people thinking about, well, after I finish study and after I've been working for a few years, is it more or less likely I'll be able to afford the home I want to start in? Or under Act, we say you will.
Now, this extra money into council would incentivize them to build more housing, but it doesn't change the shortage in construction workers and resources. Does Act have any policies or plans to help manage this shortage?
You're absolutely right. And there are estimates that New Zealand is up to 100,000 workers short in construction. Now, for many, many decades, governments have started projects, whether it's a road project or building a new hospital, but without anything else to go on to, or simply cancelling the last government's project list, it's meant a whole lot of resourcing issues have just grown over time. And when a big project or a pipeline of work is cancelled or put on hold, New Zealand workers simply look across the Tasman and they go to Australia, where wages and salaries are already higher and they have a much more definite program and pipeline of work. That's why ACT believes our 30-year infrastructure plans, some places around the world they call them city deals, there's different names for them, where the city and the region nominate the infrastructure they're going to deliver. That then becomes the pipeline of work that successive governments can't come and tip over. The problem we've got now is politicians go around the country, like political Oprah Winfrey's, saying you get a bike bridge, you get a new road, you get a tunnel. By the way, when you look under your seat, there's no money. So what ACT says is we can't keep doing it like that. If we want a pipeline of work that's enduring, then employers will invest in people, they'll invest in plant and equipment, and that is how we will actually attract more people into a workforce. It's just a more consistent long-term pipeline of work. Some people know they sign up to work in construction or any of the support roles, transport planning, resource management planning, freight, supply, logistics, quarries, that they will have a long-term and enduring workflow ahead of them so they can plan where to live, where to send their kids to school.
You also want to scrap the Resource Management Act. Can you explain how this relates to and plans to improve the housing crisis?
Well, the Resource Management Act has been pointed to by successive governments and many experts as creating too many barriers to developing land for housing. And it's also imposed huge costs on the economy. The most recent research done by the Independent Infrastructure Commission, which is an independent agency of government, showed that $1.3 billion had been spent in the previous year just on consenting alone. And so that represents somewhere between 5 to 15% of project costs. In other comparable countries, consenting and permitting is between 1 and 2, sometimes as high as 5% for really complex projects. So that's why we need to reform the Resource Management Act. What Labor has done is actually going to make it much more complicated to get consents because it introduces new concepts to their Natural and Built Environments Act, which replaces the current RMA, new concepts such as Te Oranga o Te Taiao, which I understand translates to meaning the health of the environment. But in order to actually have a definition landed, it's going to have to go all the way to the Supreme Court. That could take a decade. Lots of arguing. Actually, there's a much simpler way to do it. We just go back to a common law approach and a focus on property rights. So you can use, under ACT's proposal, what we call our alternative solutions to building New Zealand and conserving nature. People who own property will be able to develop it, and the only ones they'll have to engage with are their neighbours. And if the neighbours object, and it's a matter of height, shading, noise, hours of operations, for example, then they can go to a planning tribunal and they can have either a valuation or an order made, which the developer will have to comply with. We think that's a much more streamlined way rather than forcing applicants to go through consent hearings where all kinds of people can, through notification, can be allowed to come and object, It slows everything down. It costs a whole lot of money. ACT believes if you've got property, you want to develop it, you should only have to consult with your neighbour. There'll be many, many housing developments that can go ahead much more quickly as long as the neighbours are either compensated or assured.
Now, obviously, you're not scrapping all guidelines. So are you going to be creating or formulating a new management act that will be more focused on developing?
ACT is proposing what our alternative. We call that ACT Solutions for Building New Zealand and Conserving Nature. And it has two legs to it. One is environmental protection. We do not believe that the current Resource Management Act or Labor's replacement is going to help improve the environment in a way that New Zealanders expect the law to. At the moment, if you have a resource consent, you can continue polluting for 25, 30, 35 years, whether it's a dairy farm, whether it's a factory or a sewage treatment plant run by council. ACT believes that polluters must pay, and where pollution is excessive and above baselines, particularly when it comes to fresh water, that once local councils set the environmental limit for what is acceptable pollution, then all permits need to be traded within that limit. And it may well be that many people carrying out polluting activities simply can't afford to continue polluting, and they'll sell their permits to someone else, and over time pollution will be managed down. When it comes to actually delivering land for housing, we need a separate Urban Development and Infrastructure Act. At the moment, environmental and infrastructure and development are integrated under the RMA. We need to separate them out so that the infrastructure and the urban development side of things can simply be viewed through, does it comply with a code of practice? Are the building materials acceptable? Does the engineer sign off the plans? Can you get insurance? At which point, go ahead with your development. You shouldn't need to ask for permission and go through extensive consenting when you essentially, the developer is taking the risk on the build.
The Last Pledge Act has, in relation to the housing crisis, is to reform the Building Act. Could you walk us through some of the reforms that you plan to make?
The Building Act regulates building materials and how we assemble buildings. So at the moment, building materials have to be approved for use in New Zealand. Each council has its own approval process. I used to work at Auckland Council and I sat next to the guy who was in charge of the approval process. He had that many applications stacked up around his desk, you couldn't see the guy. It's just too slow to get building materials that are equivalent to what we already use in New Zealand approved. That's why ACT would establish a materials equivalence register, say for structural products or cladding products, windows, window frames. If they're acceptable for use in equivalent countries like Japan and California, Australia, Europe, for example, then we wouldn't require councils to give them approval. They would simply be added to the equivalence register, and any designer or builder who wanted to use them and followed the manufacturer's instructions could use them. The second thing we want to do is, rather than have councils take all the risk for signing off building consents, we'd like to offer the developers the opportunity to have their own building inspectors and insurers insure the product. Because when you're building a home, you already need to get contract works insurance if you're a developer. You don't want the building falling over halfway through the build. And there's no reason why at completion, if the engineer, the architect, the designer, whoever it is, has signed off to say that you've completed the building according to the design and to the manufacturer's specifications, then the private insurer is going to continue offering insurance on that property. That should be sufficient. At the moment, we're asking councils to sign everything off, which means they have to take all the risk on whether the building complies. ACT believes that should sit with the developer and their insurer. That would speed things up, definitely. But over time, particularly for larger scale developments, significantly reduce the cost of compliance, which means that homes are delivered to Kiwis at a more affordable price.
That was ACT MP Simon Court talking about some of the party's policies to tackle the housing crisis.
That was Simon Court from the ACT Party.
That was a 95BFM podcast. To hear more, head to 95BFM.com/bcasts.